Welcome to What is Going Om for new thought from the edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. Tonight's guest starts the first chapter of her new book with the words, "The world is waking up, and if you're reading this book, so are you. Sometimes the awakening is obvious, and sometimes the evidence is hard to find. In my experience, what you see depends on where, and especially how, you look. But more on that later. For now, let's talk about a question that seems obvious to me, and I'm talking about her, not me, but is rarely asked. And that question is, what comes after awakening? The book is called Stories from My Last Lifetime, From Awakening to Mastery, and the author is accomplished channeler, writer, and author Jean Tinder, who has presented numerous spiritual workshops and retreats and has shared thousands of life-changing private channeling sessions with clients across the globe. Jean Tinder joins me now to share the details of her insights, her ahas, and answers to many of the thorny questions that plague those on a spiritual journey, not the least of which are, what does come after awakening? Why do we keep coming back? And why, after more than 1,400 incarnations on this planet, she now says that she is complete. Jean Tinder, welcome.
Thank you, Sandy. It's good to be here with you.
Good to have you, Jean. Well, what a book. But let's start, before we dive into it, let's start with your background. Let's hear a little bit about how you got to that book, Jean, and all of the incredible ahas and the wisdom that you share in it. I mean, you had a very unconventional upbringing. You were raised in a deeply conservative family of Seventh-day Adventist missionaries. You never attended school. You spent countless hours devouring books by the dozen and wandering the forests and mountains around your home in the Pacific Northwest, where you developed a deep love for nature and a close contact with spirit. Sounds like the childhood, you know, that one all of us would want. I'm sure it wasn't quite that way, but tell us about your journey from that super conservative upbringing to someone who knows who she is and why she's here.
It's been quite a journey. I would have to say my more modern leg of my search began in my early 20s. I was raised, as you said, in this very religious, conservative household. Yeah, there were challenges, but it was in many ways also an idyllic childhood. But I took it all very seriously. I took the religion seriously. We did worship morning and evening, and a lot of prayers, a lot of church, a lot of sermons. And it was all very important to me. I took it very seriously. But as I grew into my teens, I would question the logic of the theology and the things that I was taught about God. God is love. God does not judge. But even in the Bible, which I read through more than once, there was so many contradictions. And when I would ask questions, people would say, well, God will explain it when we get to heaven, which kind of didn't really work for me. But then in my early 20s, I experienced some death in the people, you know, somewhat close to me. And somehow I just knew in my heart that death was different than my religion had taught. And the Seventh-day Adventists believed that when you die, you are your body, you're there in the ground, and one day when Jesus comes back, he will resurrect your physical body, put it back together, and take you to heaven. And something about that just didn't make sense to me. So I started reading books about near-death experiences, and that led to past life regressions, the idea of other lifetimes, and it just opened up a whole new world. So I started really exploring those things and finding more things that made a lot more sense than the dogmatic religious ideas that I was taught. And it's just been a constant journey of exploration ever since then.
In 1997, your bio says that you began a series of conversations with God in your journal and eventually realized that God comes in many different flavors for many beings. Tell us a little bit about that period.
Yes, at the time, I and my husband at the time were attending evangelical Christian church. It was one where basically communicating with God was welcomed. You know, you get words from the Lord to share with the congregation. Now I would call that channeling, which is essentially what channeling is. You sense a message or information that's being offered, and you translate it into words that others can understand. Mm. At the time, I was... the first time it happened, I'll never forget. It was kind of a stressful day with the family. My husband was going off to deal with a challenging client, and I was standing there telling him goodbye, wishing him a good day, and I just noticed that I felt something rising within me or coming in or pressing on me. And the only way I knew how to deal with that or address it was to go write in my journal. I've been keeping journals since I was a child. And I went to write, and it wasn't what I'd call automatic writing, but something wanted to express. And it turned out to be a page full of kind of reassurance, reminders, you've got this, things are going to work out, you'll be okay. You know, kind of random, well, not random, but just encouraging things. And I realized that did not come from my own human mind. And the more I explored this connection, you know, I found later I could ask a question and then take a deep breath and feel the answer. And at the time, the only label I had for where this was coming from was God. God is unseen, God is loving, God is supportive. What else would it be? And over the years, I did come to understand that God or spirit or our non-physical friends come in many different flavors, just as humans do. And I learned to be able to communicate with different beings. But it was a process over a number of years to help me really feel and sense how the communication was coming in, the different flavors of the different beings, and how to use my discernment as well. Because just like in the human world, there are people that you know they're truthful, you know that they have your highest good, or they're in integrity, and there's others where you just know that's not the case. And it's the same with non-physical beings as well.
So you did go on to work with many angelic entities, including Tobias, Saint-Germain, Adama Saint-Germain, Raphael, Kuthumi, Yeshua. Which came first?
I would say, well, it was kind of an interesting journey. I spent several years talking with God in my journal. It got to the point where my husband, at some point I told him about it, and he started asking for advice, like, you know, what should I do here? What should I do there? Go ask God, let me know what he says, kind of thing. And it got to a point where that didn't feel real good to me. I felt like, you know, we do have a human responsibility to take care of our lives and so on, make choices. So I put it away. For about a year, I just stopped doing that, sometimes only for myself, but not for anybody else. During that time, life brought a lot of changes, and probably the most important one is that I found Crimson Circle, the work of Jeffrey Hoppe, who channels Tobias. And life kind of went through some huge upheavals, and when it calmed down again, I really dialed in to the Crimson Circle materials, and it felt so familiar and so precious to me. And at some point, I had the thought, I wonder if I can talk to Tobias the way I used to talk to God. And so when there was a quiet moment in my day, by then I had a new baby and was living in a completely different state and all these things, I found a quiet moment and went into my room and took a few deep breaths, got out my journal, and sort of opened up or tuned in. And there was Tobias. And I felt his essence, his energy, his love. And it was very familiar to me, and I recognized some times in the past when he had been with me. I hadn't known at the time. I didn't have the ability to label it as anything besides God because of my own perspective. But I recognized that feeling, that essence. And not long after that, I also tuned in to the energy of Yeshua, or Jesus, who was also bringing in a few messages through the Crimson Circle material. And again, I recognize that. And it's a different flavor than Tobias, just like you can feel the difference between your different friends. Mm. And so it opened up that way.
So you, through a number of synchronistic events, you ended up actually working with the Crimson Circle. You became their content manager, and you produce their monthly magazine, Shomba. And
yes.
You write articles, and it is those articles that form the basis of this book.
Yes.
And many of your observations and your insights and your learnings and ahas and experiences over the years of producing those articles are in this book. And I have to say that I read a gazillion books, and it takes a lot for a book to impress me. What I found with your one was that it was like a handbook. It was like a handbook for anybody waking up and wanting all the answers. It had so much rich material in it. It was one of those books that I was so glad I was reading and not hurrying to get through, because, you know, I had to read it for an interview. There are many, many topics in that book. I want to focus on a few of them as we go through the show. And I think let's start with that big question, that what comes after awakening? You say it's usually not at all what one expects.
Well, that's very true. To me, and this is my personal understanding and definition of this, it may or may not match others, but the way I see awakening, spiritual awakening, is when you come to that place that you sense, you know, you just can't escape the feeling that there's more to life than what you've been taught, maybe through your religion or your teachers or just your life experience. There's more to it. There's a deeper meaning behind what's happening. And it's not explained by the typical religious teachings, philosophical teachings, physics, and all of that. So awakening is when you just know there's more and you start searching. You start seeking. And, you know, one of the first things I dived into was, I guess, what you'd now call mind control, but where my thoughts create my reality.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts bringing the responsibility back to yourself rather than fate or God or struggle between good and evil and all that. You start, in real awakening, you start understanding that the responsibility is coming back to you and that there's a lot more going on. Now, I wouldn't go into mind control now. I understand creation on a different level in a different way, I guess, but that was a beginning. So from the bigger picture, awakening is beginning to remember who you really are. And that comes in incrementally, bit by bit, because if we remembered who we really are, all of a sudden it would kind of blow us up, blow our mind, blow our body, And people have done that, but then they don't usually stay on Earth much longer after that. It kind of shorts all of the circuits. So awakening is a bit by bit, remembering who you really are. Now, during our journey on Earth, we've taken on a lot of limitations, a lot of patterns, a lot of overlays, ways of doing things, a lot of distorted energies, just a whole bunch of layers in our journey of experience. And none of it's been wrong or a mistake. It's just how we've dived into experiencing life. Awakening is realizing there's more to it. We're not stuck here. There is a purpose for us being here. It's not some random coincidence.
And what do you think that purpose is?
Experience.
Experience.
We're here to experience life. And to answer that ancient original question, who am I? As a soul, long before we ever came to Earth, we became aware of ourselves, said, oh, I'm here. Who am I? And then we dived into experience, and that's a huge topic, which I won't go into, but the purpose of life is experience. Now, awakening is where you start realizing that, but then at some point you come back out of experience. You could compare it to you get together with your friends and you decide to play a game, let's say Monopoly. And you sit down at the table and you put out all the playing fields, all the pieces and everything, and you play that. And at some point you get so focused into the game that your awareness is limited to your playing piece. Let's say your human self is that little car running around the Monopoly board. But eventually you've had enough of the game, and you start waking up and realizing, wait, there's more to who I am than this little token going around the board at the roll of the dice. There's more. What's beyond awakening?
Jean, I'm going to hold you there. You can tell us what that more is after the break.
Right.
You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with channeler, writer, and author Jean Tinder. And we're talking about her book, Stories from My Last Lifetime, From Awakening to Mastery, which chronicles her 35-year-plus journey from ultra-conservative preacher's kid to someone who now knows who she is and why she's here. We'll be back with more from Jean Tinder after this break.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
With so much loss, you may feel like you can't handle it all. Meditation or other spiritual practices can help you feel more grounded and better able to cope.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
Vox Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Join me every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio for Vox Novus, the new voice.
Mental health. Most people think it means mental illness. Most people are wrong. Mental health doesn't apply to just some of us. It applies to everyone. We're all susceptible to anxiety and depression. They're human conditions, and no person should ever feel embarrassed, ashamed, or be discriminated against for being human. Cracked the Podcast strips away the shame, fear, and stigma by expanding the conversation into areas less often visited. From brain and body chemistry, hormones, food, nutrition, trauma, and the microbiome, to pharmaceutical drugs, psychedelic substances, meditation, visionary experiences, and spiritual awakenings. Cracked, the podcast, will explore them all, including the notion that, for many,
breakdown can be the beginning of breakthrough. For in the words of singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen, there is a crack in everything. It's where the light gets in. Cracked, the podcast, slaying the dragons of mental health. Join co-hosts Sandy Sedgebeer and Rebecca Shaper on the first and third Thursday of every month at 12 noon Eastern Time.
Came across someone struggling with hunger. How would you recognize them?
By their clothes.
Their age.
The way they speak.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Jean Tinder, you were talking to us before the break about what happens after awakening. I would say that in my observation, many people think when they wake up that this is it, hallelujah, you know, I've got it all now, when in fact the story is quite different, isn't it? That's just the beginning.
Yes, it's very different. Awakening is realizing you're playing the game, so let's say the game of Monopoly, but you're still in it, you're still focused in it, and what's beyond that is coming out of the game, or bringing your full self to the game and realizing it's just the game that you decided to play, that you're creating. So what's after awakening is coming back to your true self. And it's not necessarily about becoming superhuman or making your human any better or different, but it's more about bringing your full awareness, your bigger awareness of who you really are and what's really going on into your human experience. And that can be a very challenging and enlightening journey.
And that's when you discover that, the angry you, the jealous you, the timid you, all of those things that you have become or the roles that you've played are actually just aspects. They're not who you are.
Exactly. Yes.
Mm. Yeah. You lay this out really brilliantly in the book, and you have many, many stories of your own experiences as you were gradually learning more about yourself and, you know, the capabilities that you had. And I wish we could, you know, dive into many of them, but we can't. I want to talk about something that is a lot of people who are waking up are playing with, and not necessarily in, I won't say the right way, but in a misinformed way, and that's creating your own reality and, creating abundance, creating things in your life. And as you pointed out earlier, you know, we are creators, but we've got to take responsibility for what we create. Now, you share a number of stories about, the stories that we have with those characters that we play. And there's one in particular that I found really interesting, and that was one where you were talking about practical magic. I think it was in your chapter on practical magic, and you had an experience where you had a very dangerous situation on your hands in the mountains with your car and your baby daughter in the car, and you remembered your ability to create. Tell us a little bit about that story.
That's one that I will never forget. I had my 18-month-old daughter and I had just moved to Colorado, and we had no home, no job. We found a place to live a few days after arriving, but didn't know anybody. Anyway, I took a job delivering phone books because it was something I could bring her along, and they would pay right away, and it was a way to survive till I got something else figured out. So I took one of the routes that was up in the mountain. This was winter time. There was a couple feet of snow in the mountains, and as I tell in the book, I pulled into someone's driveway, dropped off the phone book, and backed out. But I took the wrong angle and backed right into the ditch and was instantly stuck. And I got out of the car to investigate the situation, left the car running, and somehow my daughter, with her feet, pushed the lock button. So I was locked out of the car in my shirt sleeves. The car was running. She was in there, nobody around, in the dead of winter. So that was the setup. And as would be expected, I kind of panicked. It's like, what on earth am I going to do? Am I going to go down and try to find someone? Everybody's away at work. There's hardly any houses. I don't have my jacket on because the car was warm. And how do I walk away from my daughter? I just couldn't come up from my human mind. I could not come up with a reasonable solution. But through the Crimson Circle materials, something that was always said so often is take a good deep breath. The answer comes to you on the breath. Everything you need is there with the breath. Take a breath, connect with yourself, open up to potentials you can't see when you're all caught up in the mind or fear or shame or anything else, any other limitation. And I remembered that, and it's like, what else do I have? I have nothing else. And so I stood there in the snow and took some good deep breaths. I literally had nothing else to do, and it's like, all right, this is it, do or die. It has to work. And after a couple of good deep breaths, I noticed my daughter. She was in her car seat, and she was kind of squirming, and she was trying to reach her little toes over to the door lock button. And in this car, you had to pull on the button to unlock. You push it to lock, and you pull it to unlock. And it's like, that's not even possible for her to pull, let alone know what to do. She's just a baby. And I think as a baby, she was still connected with the angels and spirit and all that. And after a few seconds of struggling, she literally pulled the button with her toes and unlocked the car. I cannot explain how she did it, but I watched it happen. And, of course, I yanked the door open and grabbed the keys and got the car unstuck. And within the space of just a few minutes, everything changed. Because I chose to come back to the breath, to come back to myself, to come back to trust, to come back to the acceptance that I'm creating this reality, not through my mind or an agenda of this is what I need to happen. I didn't pray for her to unlock the door. She's a baby. That wouldn't make sense. I had no agenda other than it's okay. I know it's going to be okay. Just come back to the breath. And it was okay.
The breath comes up again, doesn't it, in your book a few times. You talk about breath, and you talk about the breath of God, which I found very impactful. And it opened up a whole new vision of what we can do with our breathing. You've created things just from breathing.
Yes. Well, if you think about it, your first, very first choice when you come to the planet is to take a breath. If you don't take that breath, you don't come to the planet. You don't stay. Baby dies. When you come into your body as a baby, you take that breath, and that's your choice to be here, to engage in life, to connect with yourself as a human. That profound choice doesn't go away. It doesn't lessen in importance as you live. It's a way of connecting with your full self. I mean, sure, we breathe to bring in oxygen and keep the body going, although most people breathe very shallow, and even myself, I have to remind myself even to breathe deeply. But when you make a conscious choice to breathe, you're breathing in yourself, your full self, your true self, breathing in your own energy, your own ability as a creator. And it doesn't have to be guided by your mind or your thoughts or some human agenda. You're just here. You bring your full self here, and with that full self, you open up to all kinds of potentials that your human self can't be aware of necessarily. But you open up, and that conscious breath connects your human with your full self, and that makes all the difference.
And you said that we're here for experience, but we're also here You know, along with that is there are other things like learning to master ourselves, learning more about who we are and why we're here, and then developing self-love and integrating the many expressions and the aspects and the parts of ourselves.
Yes.
Say a little bit more about some of these things, because these are the things that people find the hardest to achieve. I mean, self-love. You know, who honestly can put their hand on their heart and say, I love myself absolutely unconditionally as I am? Very few people.
Yes, and in a way we're here not to learn to love ourselves, but to unlearn not loving ourselves.
Well put.
Any baby that comes in, they don't have a problem loving themselves.
No.
Now, once they start growing and learn all the ways that they are wrong or start bringing in patterns from other lifetimes, then yes, it's hard to love self. Initially, we come to Earth for experience, but part of that experience and the many experiences we've been through have caused us to go to places where we find it very difficult to love ourselves. Maybe we dived in like a child on a playground and they're tearing around like a maniac and maybe throwing sand and it gets in someone's eyes and maybe someone goes blind because of that. And at some point they realize what happened and, oh, then they realize that was a horrible thing to do. Obviously, this is a way oversimplification, but in the enthusiasm for experience, at the human level, we've created a lot of suffering as well for ourselves and others. And then comes the self-judgment, then comes the judgment of others, the rejection of others because of them not accepting who we are, and all this stuff of the human experience. And then on our way back out, that's when it's time to remember to love ourselves. And if you can step back, it's not just convincing the human to love itself, because the human will come up with countless reasons why that's impossible or not deserved or shouldn't happen. But if you step back to who you really are and say, wow, I put myself into such limitation, into such deep experiences. What an incredible choice that I made. I love this human expression of me for going through such tough things. I love her so much. It's very much like loving a child that's been through some tough stuff, but is still cheerful and still coming back and still believing the best. But, oh, I love you for having the strength to go into that and go through it and survive it, and here you are. And you start perceiving your human through the eyes of your soul, and you can't not love yourself.
You have a gift for phrasing that in your book and many other concepts as well in such a way that it is so easy to connect with and understand. And that is something that isn't that common in my experience. And I think that's one of the things that makes this book so good. You talk about a number of things, about how we can begin to develop self-love, self-compassion and integration. You talk about something called a sexual energy virus. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, this comes from one of the classes or schools presented by Tobias, channeled by Jeffrey Hoppe a number of years ago. And it's called the Sexual Energy School. And something addressed within that school is the sexual energy virus. Now, the reason it's called sexual energy, the primary reason is because it has to do with duality. The biggest manifestation of duality is masculine versus feminine.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, over the eons of time on Earth and elsewhere, there has been great imbalance between masculine and feminine energies. And it's not that one is good and one is bad. There's just been a lot of energy games and a lot of imbalance between those expressions of duality, as well as light, dark, good, bad, and all of that. But masculine, feminine is the easiest to comprehend. The virus is when one side of duality or the other tries to take control, tries to get energy. The virus needs energy from outside of itself, and it causes people then to try to take energy from others. They feel that they need the energy through attention, through drama, through a lot of different ways, through being a victim. You know, even a victim has to take energy because of the virus through attention or whatever it might be. And this is a whole other topic that's far too big to really go into detail. But the virus is what causes humans to take energy from others, essentially.
And you say that every human being has this, and the only cure is absolute self-love, self-compassion,
yes,
and integration.
Because
carry on.
Ultimately, every one of us has everything we need inside. And so it's the limitations and distortions we've taken on that make us think we have to get it somewhere else. When you come back to self-love and balance, then you find it all inside, and the virus has nothing to do anymore.
We're going to go to break now, Jane, and when we come back from it, we're going to address the question, can one give up the search for God? And what does that mean? You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with channel writer and author Jane Tinder about her book, Stories from My Last Lifetime, From Awakening to Mastery. We'll be back with more from Jane after this.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Times' flagship radio show, What Is Going On? As a long-time editor, book judge, spiritual magazine publisher and radio host, I've read thousands of books and interviewed hundreds of authors and teachers, so I know what's worth reading and what isn't. Now, with the spiritual book market growing increasingly crowded, more and more people are seeking my help in finding the authentic voices, the empowering tools, and the genuine skip the BS guidance that will make the most difference to their spiritual development. So I decided to make it easier by bringing my knowledge, experience, and considerable network of contacts together in the No BS Spiritual Book Club. There are no ads, no joining fees, no obligations, and no BS. Just an ever-growing library compiled by recognisable and respected names of the 10 best books that help them the most on their journeys. Plus, free book excerpts, audios, and live video interviews where you can quiz them about their spiritual journeys and their 10 best list choices. Your time and money are valuable, your spiritual journey even more so. If you're looking for genuine guidance from people who've walked this path before you, check out sedgbeer.com. Click on the No BS Spiritual Book Club tab. and join the club. That's sedgbeer.com, sedgbeer.com. I'll see you there.
The Equal Justice Initiative, we believe mass incarceration has to end. We have to confront our history of racial injustice and commit to a new era of truth. And the truth can inspire change. Please learn more at EJI.org.
Welcome back. Jean Tinder, you talk in your book about your passion being embodied enlightenment, something that you've always sought. And in your chapter, Welcome Home, you relate, you're talking about this particular topic, and you relate a tale about being at an event when, I think it was Adamus Saint Germain came through Geoffrey Hoppe, and he asked you whether you can let go of the search and entertain the notion that perhaps you have arrived, that you are already at home. And he said the words, "Can you give up the search for God?" What was it like for you to hear that? I mean, for somebody who's grown up in a very, very religious, environment, even with the growth that you've had over the years and being able to put that episode of your life into its proper place in your history. I mean, to be told, can you give up the search for God and understand that you are already home?
That's a really big challenge. And I think the biggest part of it is humans like to have they like to hold on to the understanding that there's a bigger picture, that somebody ultimately is in charge, in control of life, makes the sun come up every day, makes things turn out how they're supposed to, metes out justice for the inequities of life and all of that. Over the ages, that has been put on God and sometimes on the devil and different things. So for a human to really come to the understanding and acknowledgement that God is not a being far out there sort of taking care of everything, God is actually an experience within, the divine that is within, we can't really, it's very difficult to conceive of ourselves with that kind of power. And so giving up the search for God, which is really an external power that is in ultimate control of everything, that's a scary proposition. However, if you can change the perception or the ideas that you have about God, God isn't a power that's controlling. God is a birther, the creator of experience. And ultimately, yes, at your core, you are God. But that God is a different idea than the old man up in the sky somewhere. So what's really the most difficult to give up is the idea that somebody else is in control and to take responsibility, complete 100% responsibility for what happens in my experience. That's a big one. And I've faced a lot of challenges. Anybody on this journey that gets to that point of accepting responsibility faces a lot of challenges in embracing that concept because it's big. Humans, we think we're so limited, and how can I possibly be that big? How would I create such horrible things happening to me? How would all this stuff be taking place if I'm responsible?
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, it is a big one. And I think one of the problems that many people have is that they just, apart from not being able to accept their divinity, that they think that they are here on earth to learn something, to grow and evolve in school. And they've got a lot of, things to go through before they can graduate to something.
That's a very common human perception because the innate humanness is a sense of being separate, a sense of separation from God, from self, from your origins, from something. Humans feel lost here because they've dived so deep into this physical reality that they are inherently separate, or they feel separate from their source, from their origin, from themselves, ultimately. But if you think about, if we go back to the game metaphor, you don't play a Monopoly game to learn something. You do it for the experience of hanging out with your friends and seeing what kind of roll of the dice you get. Maybe you end up in jail. Maybe you go bankrupt. All this stuff. It's not to develop your soul. It's for the experience. And then to come back out of the game is just to remember, oh, yeah, I was just playing a game.
Well, Jeffrey Hoppe used to channel Tobias, and Tobias left in 2009 and returned to a human incarnation. And the primary reason was because he wanted to feel again. That feeling is the whole point of being alive on Earth. Now, you say that after more than 1,400 incarnations on planet Earth, you are complete. That's it. You're done. You're no longer a spiritual seeker. You know why you're here. You know who you are. If you're not coming back, doesn't that kind of cut you off from having that experience of being able to feel?
Well, that's a good question. What I'm done with is the limitation. Now, maybe I'll come back to Earth at some point once this lifetime is complete and I've done everything that I have set for myself to accomplish. The difference is I don't have to come back. Most people just sort of come back kind of on autopilot because there's things they want to do, there's things to finish, there's karma they believe in, and they want to have more experience. For me, I've experienced kind of everything, and so I can re-experience it at any time, whether just by revisiting that moment in time. Time kind of doesn't exist, but I can re-experience it. I can have any experience I want to, but now without limitation, without separation from myself, without forgetting who I am. And then I'm free. I'm free to return or not. Not to get lost in another incarnation, but who knows? Maybe just to show up for a few days.
Do you think it's possible that you could return and just forget all over again, and I have to do it again?
Possible, but not likely. Unless I choose it. The fact is, I've remembered myself in other lifetimes, but I came into this lifetime with a very specific purpose, to be here now, to help others remember, and therefore to go through a very specific path in this lifetime of forgetfulness and finally remembering. You know, if I look at my life and started at the bottom of the ladder, so to speak, and did remember, then I can show in a very real, tangible way, you can do this too. You can remember who you are. And so even this lifetime was kind of planned. I kind of intended to forget so that I could remember and demonstrate that.
Have the experience of remembering. Does being done with limitation make you fearless?
Yes.
So there's nothing that can instill fear in you now?
Not really. Not real fear. Obviously, the human has its moments of adrenaline if I slip on the ice or just have, you know, human moments, but there's really not anything that I truly fear.
Wow. What does that feel like?
Free. I can do whatever I want without the inherent holding back.
Well, you can do whatever you want, but, you know, doesn't Adamus also say that we don't have free will?
That's true. Most humans don't. And that's because the human is here in their sense of separation, in their limited human form, disconnected from the soul. And ultimately, the soul is the part of you, and it's not out there somewhere, but it's the part of you that's kind of making a lot of the choices. Whereas the human, a simple example would be my human self didn't want to let go of a marriage. But yet my true self, my soul, my deeper wisdom knew that that was done, that my path would be grander, more expansive on my own, and the same for the one that was my husband. And so the human maybe wanted the free will to keep the marriage going, but the soul knew that there was a better path. So where's the free will in that? When you are aligned with yourself, when you are in absolute trust of yourself and your inner guidance, then free will almost becomes irrelevant because you're just existing in experience and it doesn't matter anymore what happens.
Did your parents ever, know what you were doing, the search that you were on, and how did they react to that?
Yeah, they're aware of it. My dad told me once that I was following the devil to Denver, essentially, when I moved to Colorado. And we used to have a lot of theological discussions. He's a preacher, but for many, many years, we don't talk about much more than, you know, the weather and family stuff because we just can't connect in that way.
So you're able to just bypass it and have a relationship that bypasses that.
Yeah. I've talked a little more with my mom, but she's on her path in the religion that brings comfort and understanding to her, and I honor that path. And so, again, we don't really talk about it much.
What is the overriding message that you want to get across with this book, Jean?
That you've never made a mistake. You've been on Earth for a tremendous level of experience, diving into deep, deep experiences, forgetting your true self, but none of it has been wrong. None of it's been a mistake. Your soul, your true self, adores you, loves you, cherishes you, treasures you. And when you can open up to that within yourself, not necessarily love from the human, although that comes, but to be loved, for your human self to be loved by your divinity, your inner self, it really changes everything. And if you can just open to that, that's the most precious thing.
Mm. Well, wise words. Jean, we're out of time now. Could you just tell us a little bit, very briefly, about the channeling sessions that you offer?
Absolutely. As mentioned, I'm a channeler. I connect with the beings that are in service to my client, the one I'm speaking to. It's different each time, and I channel their perspectives and insights back for the client. And you can find more information about that on my website.
And your book is also available from your website and on Amazon.com.
Yes.
Jean Tinder, thank you for joining us today. I truly enjoyed your book, Stories from My Last Lifetime, From Awakening to Mastery. And it's available from Amazon and Jean Tinder's website, where you can also learn more about Jean, her private sessions, and her creator cards, which are now available in many languages. And the website is youaregodalso.com. Jean Tinder, thank you.
Thank you, Sandy.
That's it for this week. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. You can learn more about me and the No BS Spiritual Book Club at sedgbeer.com. In the meantime, I'll be back with another edition of What Is Going On at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.